Joining us right at the outset today is Kathy Fetke, who is CEO and founder of Real Wealth Network, which is based in Walnut Creek, California. Kathy is a licensed realtor, former mortgage broker, and active real estate investor, and she is one of America's 100 most intriguing entrepreneurs by Goldman Sachs at the first annual and now second annual Builders and Innovators Summit. And that said, Kathy, welcome to Front and Center.
Thank you so much.
Now, you actually got your BA in broadcast communications. You have worked in the newsrooms of CNN, Fox, CTV, ABC7. So before we get to real estate and Real Wealth Network, what must it be like in those newsrooms the day before this national election? What do you think?
That is a fabulous question. I think everybody's just ready for it to be over, don't you think? It's not going to be, though, because whoever gets elected, there's going to be half the country who's really upset and probably going to fight it.
Well, and you know, we live in this 24/7 news culture, so they're always looking for content, so it's almost as if our campaigns are now a perpetual four-year cycle.
Yeah, you know, and I think Saturday Night Live is doing pretty well, too, from it.
Kathy, what is Real Wealth Network?
We are a real estate investment club that helps investors and just regular folks understand the market cycles and then find the best deals that and then the best strategies in today's cycle. And that's, people get that wrong over and over again. Most people buy at the peak, sell at the trough, and just don't time it right. So you want to, of course, follow the old sage advice of buy low and sell high, or buy low and cash flow. That's my favorite.
Well, you know, there's also the sentiment among some people that investing in real estate is better than investing in the stock market. What do you say about that?
Well, it just depends on the stock, and it depends on market timing. So if you invested in the stock market right after, let's say, the Great Depression, well, you would have made a lot of money because the stock market bottomed. And, you know, the same in 2007. If you bought stocks then at the bottom, then you probably did all right. But when you buy at the top, well, that's dangerous. And so both real estate and the stock market will be, you will lose all your money in either one of those if you buy at the top before a downturn. Mm-hmm.
And that really is the key, trying to figure out when that downturn is going to occur, right?
Absolutely. In real estate, it's a little bit easier to predict, even though people in 2006, you know, many of our economists couldn't see it. In fact, the chief economist for the National Association of Realtors came out with a book basically saying there was no bubble in 2006. I think that was one of those things you kind of say, well, I guess I did things right in life because I didn't come out with that book. But, you know, so a lot of people couldn't see it, even though it was super obvious in 2006. I was in the mortgage industry, and I knew that there was a problem. And I wasn't an economist or a chief economist for that matter. So, you know, you just have to look at fundamentals. And in real estate, there's parts of the country where fundamentals are absolutely in line. In fact, in some places, it's like buying, it's the perfect time to buy. Whereas there's other parts of the country where you could stand to lose money if you bought today because you won't be cash flowing and you won't get appreciation.
What did you see when you were working in the mortgage market in 2006 that indicated to you that something wasn't right here?
Well, you know, again, a fundamental, you don't have to be a genius or an economist to understand basics and basic math. So back then I could give anyone a loan, anybody. It just didn't matter. The stated income loans allowed people to come in, state their income, and, you know, walk off with the keys to a house. So no verification needed whatsoever. And, you know, obviously that's not going to work. And even further, when there was evidence that the person couldn't pay the loan back, still the banks allowed that person to qualify on just a portion of the payment, knowing the payment would go up. I had one woman come in who made $2,000 a month and was able to qualify for a loan because they just did a teaser rate of like $500, but the bank knew that, when it adjusted, the payment was going to be $2,400 a month. There was no mathematical way that that person could pay. So it really took common sense to say, this isn't right. Something's wrong. And if you ask a few questions, you'll figure it out.
So where does the real estate market stand now? Is the bubble about to burst? Or where do we stand?
Well, it's a very different market. And so right now, loans are pretty good. I mean, anyone who got into a loan in the last decade, you know, has had to really qualify for it. So that's not our problem today. And most people had to put down a down payment unless you did an FHA loan. But home prices have gone up. So even those people who only put 3.5% down actually have some home equity now. So you know, it's a different kind of issue. The issue we have today is more related to a debt bubble, and that's reflected in the stock market. So we know that stocks are at least 60% overvalued, and if the Fed raises interest rates in December, we could see some serious volatility in the stock market in January, just like we saw last year. And that could affect and will affect real estate and the economy in general. And when you add to it that you have the baby boomers now retiring, and they're behaving very differently than they did for the last 40 years. They are taking money out of the stock market. They are retiring and spending less. So between spending less and not investing in the stock market, the economy is going to feel that. So when it comes to housing, you need to stay out of areas that might feel a stock market crash more than others.
It comes down to the old line, location, 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 right?
Absolutely. So in other words, New York City, San Francisco, these are two markets, LA, that if there was a serious decline in the stock market, the high-end real estate in those markets, Miami too probably, although there's more foreign investors there, could feel it. So a lot of people think it's actually the high end that would feel it more in the downturn than the middle class people.
Do we know what's leading to this overvaluing of the stock market?
Well, a lot of people will say it's stimulus. The government came in and tried to fix a credit crisis, a debt crisis with more debt, more stimulus, more free money. You just have to use your common sense and say, where's the fundamentals in that? How can you just create money out of thin air and throw it in the economy and say, wow, now we've got new jobs? It's like going out and getting a credit card and then hiring a bunch of people for your company. And then that sounds like, wow, your company's growing, but really you're just in debt. And so that's what we're going to have to pay the piper at some point. Either there's going to have to be a back off of stimulus and we're going to come down from the sugar high, or we're going to have to pay our debt back. And when that happens, people, again, spend less. So when investing in anything today, it's just so important to understand that markets are cycling and changing more and more quickly than they ever have. And so you can't just sit back and be lazy with your investments. That's the bottom line.
You've got to be proactive, in other words.
You do.
Okay. Talking with Kathy Fetke here on Front and Center. She is CEO and founder of Real Wealth Network. So if the Fed raises the interest rate next month, would that necessarily have an effect on mortgage rates?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is there's a lot of a ton of confusion there, actually. When the Fed raises rates, it's the overnight rate that banks lend money to each other. So it actually doesn't affect mortgage rates. It does indirectly. But as we saw last year, when the Fed raised the Fed fund rate, mortgage rates actually dropped to, new lows. And that's because when the Fed fund rate went up, the stock market tumbled, and when there's uncertainty in the stock market or in the economy in general, then investors want to pour their money into mortgages, mortgage-backed securities, because they're safe, and they're low yielding, but they're safe. And so all of a sudden you've got all this money pouring into mortgage-backed securities, there's more money to lend, and therefore rates go down. So we'll probably if the feds raise rates and we don't really have a booming economy right now, then we would actually probably see the same thing happen.
What's it going to take to get this economy rolling? I mean, we see GDP, it was 2.9% the last quarter, but there are those who say it was an aberration, that this fourth quarter is not going to be a good one. Does it go back to the fundamentals in order to have a, rather than stimulus, in order to have a robust economy?
Well, you know, to fix the economy, we've got to understand demographics. And here we've got what was the largest population, the baby boomers, doing what I said. They're taking their money out of the stock market. They are retiring. They're not spending the way they used to. Baby boomers used to spend like crazy, and they that helped the economy grow, but they're not now. And so who's going to take their place? Who's going to start spending money? Our economy is based on 80% of consumer spending. And so, you know, are the millennials going to start spending money? You know, they're in debt too. And they're just trying to get started in life. So they're not going to be able to fill in where the baby boomers left off. So we as a country have to understand that downsizing and tightening up and spending less is part of a cycle. And that's the cycle we're going to be facing. And so the government can try to throw money at us so that we'll spend money. But, you know, eventually that game is going to end. So we have to tighten our belts a little. It's just like any time you find yourself over, you know, just in way too much debt, you've got a couple choices. You either make more money to pay off that debt or you spend less. And so, you know, instead of taxing businesses to death, because businesses are what create jobs and help people to spend, of course we know that, it's been in the news and in the politics constantly, right. Is how do we support small business and get them back into action? And when you've got all these requirements, including, you know, we're going to raise the minimum wage, we're going to require, I think, you know, there was like profit sharing. I mean, there's all these things. And listen, if you're going to force a small company to do profit sharing, then also the employees should have to share in losses. You know, let's even the playing field here. Make it interesting for businesses to be able to do business. That's why Texas took off. That's why they have the strongest job growth in the country, because they're business friendly.
See, my take has always been that if you tax business, it really is a tax on the consumer, because more than likely, what is that business going to do? Pass the cost along to the consumer, isn't it?
That's all they can do. You know, we're looking at the construction industry. That's the industry I'm in, housing, and we build a lot as well. And, you know, how could we possibly build a house and sell it for less than we put into it? You know, that's not business. And yet that's what builders are being asked to do. Building costs have gone up 30% because of government regulation. And yet everybody's screaming about housing prices going up. Well, you know what? Then stop over-regulating builders. It's literally, I mean, just where I live, you know, I've been trying to just add on to our home. And it's taken a year just to even try to get anywhere with that. So, you know, that's the biggest problem. And there's 200,000 construction jobs available right now that can't be filled. And so anyway, that's the biggest problem. We need to incentivize businesses, not let them get away with things they shouldn't get away with and run out of the country and not pay taxes and so forth, but to still make it worth the investment to do business in the U.S.
Okay, from where you sit in the building industry, what are a couple of regulations that are just gnawing at the building industry that really shouldn't be there?
Well, some are just simple permits. The cost of permits have gone up. But in other places, it's, you know, new environmental regulations, which are wonderful. I mean, we certainly want to protect our environment. But in some cases, it just doesn't make sense. There are some new, it just depends on the state, but there are some regulations that don't make sense, you know, for properties that aren't even in a flood zone or, you know, don't require that kind of environmental regulation. So there's a whole long list, and all the states have different regulations, but an example would be in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we have runaway housing costs, the highest in the country. And yet, if you want to come in and build something, you're going to be put under rent control. And so why would a builder want to come in and put up a new apartment when they're going to be under rent control and aren't going to be able to create enough income on that building to make it work? You know, that type of thing, the consumer often wants it all. They want the jobs to come back to the U.S., but they want U.S. workers to be on a higher minimum wage, but they want Walmart prices, you know, it's just, you can't have it all. That's why most people don't buy American-made goods, because they're expensive.
I say this all the time, you know, and that is right. You can't have it all. But now you mentioned San Francisco, so because of this overregulation, well, what's the housing market like in San Francisco?
It is absolutely out of control. I mean, you know, it's actually, everything cycles, and so it's starting to soften, believe it or not, in the high end, just like New York City. Both New York City and San Francisco and Miami overbuilt the high end, and the reason for that is that the builders could not make a profit in what's really needed, which is affordable housing. With all the regulations, they couldn't break even. It would be a loss for them. So they opted for the high end, and they did that at a time when there was a lot of foreign money pouring in and people who could afford that high end. Plus, the stock market was booming, and so was high tech, at least, you know, in San Francisco, that had a big impact. So builders, by the time they got everything up and running and ready for market, well, the buyer, guess what, wasn't there. And so it's starting to slow down. We've seen that the overvaluation of high tech stocks has caused venture capitalists to pull back. So with venture capital pulling back, there just isn't the money for these companies to expand and grow and pay the enormous salaries they've been paying. So we're actually seeing a pullback now in San Francisco. So too much high-end inventory when what's really needed is affordable housing across the nation, but builders just can't make a profit.
Which areas across the country are hot right now, so to speak, when it comes to real estate?
Well, too hot, like too hot to handle.
I mean, hot like this is the time to buy. This is the time to build.
Okay. Well, that's a great reframe of that question, because people will ask what's the hottest market, and that can have so many definitions. But I love your definition, which is where's the best place to buy? You know, where's the best place to make a profit? It's probably not going to be in a hot market or a bubble market, even though that's where people go. Because people will say, wow, you know, look at Seattle, Portland, and Denver. Prices have gone up so much. Boy, if I buy something there, I'm going to make a bunch of money, just like people did last year. But you can't look at the past to determine the future in investing. If an area's already had a 20% gain, chances are that's not going to continue. It can't. And so the best places to buy would actually be less hot markets, markets that people don't know about yet. And that's what I love to do, is show people, you know, exactly that. Where are jobs going, but the world doesn't know it yet? So there's going to be a demand for housing, but it hasn't hit yet. And when it does, boy, we'll see prices go up. And that's exactly what we did in 2006 when San Francisco real estate was overvalued, overbubbled. But Texas had the opposite thing going on, totally opposite market cycle, where all these new jobs were coming, but there was very little new housing. And so, you know, prices, it just hadn't caught up yet. And so we helped investors buy in Texas. They sell their overpriced California property and 1031 exchange it tax deferred for properties in Texas that were just at the beginning of their boom. And so we have that ability to do that today, sell from the hot markets, the over bubbly, you know, frothy markets where they've already peaked, sell in those markets and buy in the markets that are just up and coming, where there's new factories being built. Like, for example, the Tesla factory in Reno.
Mm-hmm.
They've only built the first factory, and there's nine more coming, and Tesla just leased that more land because they think, you know, there's talk about they're going to start building the cars there now, and Google moved their headquarters there. There's a desperate need for housing, and that's a market that's just at the beginning of its boom.
You mentioned before how the baby boomers are pulling money out, that they're not spending like they did before. You talked about the millennials being in debt. What about the Generation Xers?
You know, nobody really talks about them.
No.
But, you know, the truth is, in 10 years, because baby boomers are aging, you know, and that therefore dying, that population will be shrinking starting now. And then the Gen X population will actually be growing from immigration. And so we're actually going to see that Gen Xers have a little bit more influence in about 10 years. But unfortunately, the Gen Xers were exactly the generation that got hammered by the last housing crisis. And they got wiped out because 31 years of age is the typical first-time home buying age, and that was the Gen Xers. So they bought at the peak, they lost everything, and they're recovering. But like I said, in 10 years, they'll be recovered, and they will have an impact on the economy. In the meantime, a lot of them will be renting, which leaves a great opportunity for people looking for an investment in rental property. This is an incredible time to be a landlord.
Sure. Before we wrap up our interview, because of course you cut your teeth in the broadcast industry, that was your career. What made you switch careers?
Great question. Well, first of all, I was a news reporter and writer, and then I got married and had children, and I couldn't merge the two. I mean, I didn't want to be chasing fires and murderers when I had, you know, babies or I was pregnant, you know. And so I made the choice to raise my children. But then my husband, whose career was absolutely taking off, he got terrible medical news and was told he was diagnosed with melanoma. And then after testing, they thought it spread to his liver, and he was told he had 6 months to live. Fortunately, the doctor was wrong, and he's healthy and fabulous and alive and well today. But back then, you know, we didn't know.
That's
so
right.
I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I didn't want to go back to the busy craziness of news. So I thought, how can I be a stay-at-home mom and still make money? And the answer was passive income. So I had a radio show called The Real Wealth Show, and I thought, I'm going to use that show to find out how you make passive income. And that's what we did. I just became obsessed with the concept of buying an asset like real estate and renting it out for cash flow, which would allow me to raise my children. And then we started this network, because it turns out I wasn't the only person in the world who wanted that information.
Wow. Kathy Fetke, CEO and founder of Real Wealth Network. Kathy, thank you very much for being a guest today on Front and Center.
Oh, thanks for having me.